want to do this monologue and then go into hiding, okay? Not even Sean Penn will find me.
I think for most musicians over the last 40, 50 years, he was the one. He was the one who kind of showed what you could do if you were fearless. You had the talent, you had the creativity, but you didn't allow yourself to be put in a box.
Football's become soft. Football has become soft. Now, I'll be criticized for that. They'll say, oh, isn't that terrible? But football's become soft like our country has become soft.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the program. It is Monday, and it's January 11th, 2016. Hope you're all staying warm as you get out and get going this morning, or maybe you're already at work. It was so cold that my windows were frozen on my car this morning. It's that kind of cold that we haven't been used to in a long, long time. But once you get into the office and start looking at the markets, it'll warm you up pretty nicely. It was another rough, uneasy night on world markets. Overseas, the Chinese, Australian, Russian stock markets all lost considerable ground. In China, the midday losses slid into the end-of-day losses, and when it was all said and done, nearly 6% of the market index had fallen. The value of the index had fallen, and that is comparable to last week's global sell-off, and it sets up another potentially bad day here in the United States. For Wall Street, the Shanghai Composite fell 5.3% to 3,018. The smaller Shenzhen Composite Index fell 6%. It was last down just 3%. Shares in Hong Kong sank to their lowest level in roughly 2.5 years. The Hang Seng fell almost 3% overnight, 2.4% at 19,970. That was on track to close below 20,000 for the first time since June 2013. We'll get a full gauge of those markets shortly. Australia's benchmark was down about a percent and a half, and South Korea's market fell about another percent and a half. Japan's stock market closed for a national holiday today, so they at least had a little breathing room. The Russian ruble has tanked on the first day of trading after a 10-day holiday period as the price of oil continues to decline. The national currency dropped nearly 2% into trading 76.1 rubles on Monday at the Moscow Stock Exchange first currency trading session since December 31st. Oil prices are the backbone of the Russian economy. They have been declining over the past week, pressured by fears about the China downturn. In other headlines, business headlines today, there is a breaking story coming in out of Belgium this morning, where authorities in Brussels with the European Union say Belgium gave 35 multinationals illegal tax break orders or illegal tax breaks, and it has ordered the repayment of nearly 700 million euros. Details on that are still developing, but again, 35 multinationals, we don't know from where or from what corporations or what potential corporations they might be connected to have been accused of taking illegal tax breaks, 700 million euros worth. Well, on Friday, we can all look back to a really good day here in the United States where business was concerned. You remember non-farm payrolls increased to seasonally adjusted 292,000 for the December report. The unemployment rate held steady at 5% last month. That's still the lowest unemployment rate since April of 2008. The Labor Department also made some revisions for the previous 2 months, 50,000 more jobs created in October and November than previously estimated. And that resulted in a fourth quarter being the best three-month stretch of job creation in 2015. But we were all sort of asking ourselves in the newsroom, in the business office, is 5% really the unemployment rate? Is that the real unemployment rate? And there's some indication, a lot of indication, rather, that it's not. Scott Sargis is a Chicago-based executive recruiter and founder of Strategic Search Corporation. He is an expert when it comes to these sorts of things, and he joins me now via Skype. Scott, are the numbers that we saw released on Friday an accurate representation of the real number of people unemployed in America?
It is not, because if you look at real unemployment, which adds on those who are involuntarily working part-time, Steve, as well as those who've just given up, that figure goes up almost the double, or 9.9%. You have to look at it from several perspectives. If you look at it from the macro perspective of all job candidates, you know, it's hard because it's up to the candidate to report themselves. But in my field where I place engineering and technical people, the unemployment rate for engineers is almost zero.
And so why is it so hard to get an accurate reading of how many people are actually without work? Why aren't those people who are unemployed and not maybe getting an unemployment check being counted?
As you mentioned, Steve, if you're not getting unemployment benefits anymore, then as a job seeker, you're not motivated to report these figures to those offices. Or if you've given up looking, you're not motivated to give it, you know, because that's the last thing on your mind is to present those figures to the government. So you have a wealth of people that are, you know, have given up, and they're not motivated to give those figures, so the government can't accurately judge them.
Scott, you know, at one point in 2015, maybe it was 2014, there were as many as 93 million people out of the workforce looking for work but not being counted by the unemployment rate. Does that sound right, or does that sound high?
Well, if you look at the figure from the government, they say that there's 1.8 million, you know, because their total unemployment figures that came out on Friday were 15.7 million. That's 7.9 million unemployed, 6 million involuntarily working part-time, and 1.8 million. Now, I think, and it's hard to accurately tell, that 1.8 million that aren't even counted is very low. But the figure that you had mentioned seems very, very, very high.
So, Scott, what does Friday's report say about the health of the economy overall?
Well, if you look at this was the 63rd straight month of jobs creation, Steve. So that's a positive thing. So it's building a kind of aura among job seekers. And then there's, you know, several areas, you know, that had created jobs, and it was pretty widespread. Because if you look at professional and business services, they rose by 72,000. Healthcare employment rose again at 39,000. Food services and drinking places added 37,000 people. And construction added people for the third straight month, or 45,000 jobs. So it appears, if you look at the positives, that there's a widespread amount of jobs creation. One area is in the food and confectionery industry, maintenance mechanics with high-speed packaging and filling experience, especially Hasten equipment. Another area is in this construction area, as I mentioned earlier, this is the third straight month of jobs creation. Electrical engineers / project managers with commercial construction and renovation experience. And finally, healthcare, which continues to grow. So nurses are in high demand, as well as other healthcare professionals.
So by all measures, the economy is doing well. What do you think could come in its way to bring it to a screeching halt?
Well, you saw it last week in China. You know, China has a lot of our bonds, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and their economy going down and defaults, you know, in the financial market. So those types of things are all interrelated to the jobs market.
So people are brushing off their resumes here at the new year and looking for work, maybe, or looking for a new job. What advice would you give them?
Well, one of my mantras, Steve, is resumes don't get you hired, you do. And what that means is the resume is a necessary evil, and you should have one, and you should have it updated. But one of the best ways to get new contacts is networking. And there's two kinds of networking. There's the traditional networking, Steve, where you tell everyone you know you're looking for a job. That includes friends and family. And there's the new high-tech version of that, which is social media networking, using social media sites like LinkedIn to make connections. Because people do want to help you out, but you have to go out there and ask them about things. And one of the best tools for helping you, Steve, is the 30-second elevator pitch, where you want to do three things. tell people who you are, what you're looking for, and your two to three greatest strengths. You want to have as much quantitative information in your resume as possible. As I mentioned previously, resume is not going to get you hired. You are, but you want to have as high-powered a resume as possible. And one of the ways to do that is have as many quantitative bits of information as possible. Any ways that you've made money for past employers, any ways that you've saved money, or any patents or any awards that you have, because that is the key. Think of the resume as your advertisement, and numbers can help you really have an impactful resume. So remember that mantra, numbers, numbers, numbers. That means as much quantitative information as possible in your resume so you stand out.
Scott Sergis is the executive recruiter at Chicago-based Strategic Search Corporation. He's been an executive recruiter for a couple of decades now, so he knows what he's talking about. Numbers, numbers, numbers. You can find him on Twitter, too, at Scott Sergis. It is 519. This is the opening bell. Good morning, everyone. Just real briefly before we head to break in traffic, we want to tell you the Dow futures are actually higher today, despite what's going on around the world. The Dow futures up 40. The S&P futures up 5 over. Overseas, Asia, all of the Asian markets were lower.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. It's another big sell-off in the Asian markets. Shanghai has closed down nearly 5.5%, while Hong Kong gave up 2.5% in late trade. Last week was one of the worst starts to a new year on record, with the Dow and the S&P 500 losing 6% of their value. The North American Car of the Year and Truck Utility of the Year are announced later today at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. Finalists include the Honda Civic, Chevy Malibu, and Mazda MX-5 Miata. The event provides bragging rights to the various car makers. The lack of a winner on Saturday provides a second chance for everyone who lost out in the Powerball lottery drawing. Wednesday's estimated jackpot has soared to nearly $1.5 billion. The upfront cash payout would be about $806 million. And the CEO at Volkswagen will offer a fix to the diesel engine MPG scandal when he meets with U.S. environmental regulators this week. Some VW engines were found to be fudging in their emissions tests. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
It's 524. Welcome back to the opening bell here on WGN 720. I'm Steve Grzanich. Chilly morning to get things going today. Make sure you allow yourself extra time and plan on some snow this afternoon in the Chicago area as you head home from work later on today. Well, if you've been driving around at all, you know that gas prices are the lowest they've been in a long time, especially if you get outside of the city of Chicago. I was recently downstate and ran into gas at $1.70 a gallon. The low gas prices are like that all over the country, and it is fueling a resurgence of sorts in the purchase of recreational vehicles. They're actually flying off sales lots across the country at the fastest rate in more than a decade. Low gas prices, along with easy credit, are two reasons for the sales surge. But another big reason is that baby boomers are reaching retirement age in record numbers, and they are opting to hit the open road. ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan joins us from Dallas on the opening bell. Jim, welcome. You have been looking at some of the numbers. How strong are these RV sales?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that they're looking at record numbers perhaps going. Into this year as well. North American retail sales of RVs in the first 10 months of last year were up 11% from the year before that. And you're talking about 330,000 of these things leaving the lots and people driving away and headed off to parts unknown. And yeah, I think part of it is the lower gas prices that we've seen for the last year or so, but also easy money out there. It's easy to get a loan on something like that. And the third thing that you're seeing is sort of demographic. The baby boomers, the 50-plus and 60-plus, are reaching that retirement age and willing to trade in their permanent residence for an RV and traveling around the country, Steve.
Well, you know, gas for most of us driving cars around, at least here in Illinois, is $1.70 in some places.
Yeah.
Do most of these RVs take diesel or regular fuel, or is it what kind of fuel do they take?
some of each. And, and yet diesel prices have been coming down somewhat. They're still generally higher than your gasoline prices. But I think most people look at the comparison from just a couple of years ago and they say maybe it's not such a bad idea and a fairly good deal, and are willing to make that commitment of as little as $5,000 or $6,000 up to $200,000 or more. There's an RV show going on here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and you're looking at vehicles that go for $1 million or more.
And that's you talk about the show that's going on there. Some of these RVs are kind of state of the art. I mean, some of them are really cool. I mean, do you think that might be fueling too some of the sales, that these things have just reached a level where they're moving homes to an extent that we've not seen before?
Yeah, you know, if not moving sales, then at least getting attention. You're likely, if you see something like this, willing to climb in and take a look at the marble floors and countertops and sort of luxury touches you'll find in high-end homes. And yeah, you might look at the price tag and say, maybe we'll step it down just a bit from here. But without all those amenities, without all the glitz and glamour, you probably wouldn't have climbed in the first place, right, Steve?
Right, I guess so. So give us a sense of what these things cost.
Well, yeah, I mean, on the low end, you're looking at something that you might pay for a car or a pickup truck, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000. But again, you know, if you start looking up at one with a living room or with the full bathroom, then you're easily over $100,000 for that. But I mean, but if you're comparing that to the price of the house, if you're a retiree and you decide you really want to go all in, sell a house and pack up an RV and go, it's fairly comparable.
Were you over at the RV show? What kind of new things are coming out on these vehicles?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. I mean, you're talking about wood grain paneling there that you've probably seen for several years, but this is high-end stuff that they're talking about, and it's impressive to see marble countertops and things in something that's rolling down the highway at 65 miles an hour.
Yeah, beep, beep, move over. Happy trails. Jim Ryan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the opening bell on 720 WGN. We have some more information about this developing story that's coming in out of Brussels this morning now. The European Union has ordered Belgium to recover nearly $760 million in illegal tax breaks from 35 multinationals in the latest move to fight sweet deals many member states have offered to some of the world's biggest companies. EU Competition Commissioner Margaret Vestager said today that the tax advantage given only to a select few companies actually distorts competition on the merits of putting smaller competitors who are not multinational on equal footing. We still don't know who these companies are or who the representatives of these companies are, but we hope to get more information. Again, this is just coming out of the capital of Belgium, Brussels. As a matter of fact, we're hearing now that some of them may include Fiat and Starbucks. Again, this is a story that's still developing. Stay tuned to the opening bell. Hopefully we'll have more before the show ends, and then we'll have more throughout the morning on Your Money. This is WGN 720, and we'll be back with news next.
The referees, they want to all throw flags so their wife sees them at home. Oh, there's my husband. True. He just broke up. He just gave a 15-yard penalty on one of the most beautiful tackles made this year, right?
The famed singer had been battling cancer for the last year and a half, according to his reps. We're told he died Sunday, surrounded by his family. The news comes as a surprise to many, especially considering Bowie just released a new album 3 days ago called Black Star.
Most of all, I want to thank my imaginary friend, Rocky Balboa, for being the best friend I ever had.
This is the opening bell on WGN 720. It's 5:38. Good morning again, everybody. I'm Steve Krasanich. Welcome to Monday. Overseas, the stock markets in Asia have tanked again overnight, and in Russia and Australia as well. But the Dow futures this morning are not looking too bad. The Dow Jones futures up 63 points. The S&P futures are up 10. Well, have you always had a dream maybe of quitting your job and starting your own business and just, you know, whatever it is that you like to do, whether it's knit, make quilts, cook bundt cakes? Dave, you're looking like maybe that's a yes.
What? No, I love my job.
Yeah.
I'm lucky. I really love what I do. But if I didn't, yes, then yes would be the answer to your question, Steve.
Okay, let's say you like to quilt or
yeah, well, I do in my spare time.
Okay. Would you have any idea how to even start a business?
Not well. First of all, I wouldn't have a clue as to how to start a quilt. But to play with you here, no, I would have no idea how to start a business.
Well, that's our next guest. We're going to walk through this process, and this is a delicious segment. I'm going to have to tell you right off the top. Erica Long is with us this morning, and she's starting a business called Nothing Bundt Cakes. Bundt Cakes. Not Bundt Cakes, and up in Lincoln Park. And Erica, thanks for getting up and coming in this morning and being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. If you want to come just a little closer to that microphone. So the question is, you have this idea, you know what you're going to do. What's your first step?
Well, the first step was I didn't even have a clue that I knew this is where I would end up today. I actually tasted the cake. And the rest is history. I tasted the cake and decided to look into the company and into franchising opportunities. And it really started from there. And then reached out, they reached back. And it kind of was an interview process on both ends for several months and a lot of preparation for financials and territory and storefronts and would the concept actually work in the city, because predominantly until now, this has worked in suburb locations throughout the country. So the Lincoln Park Nothing Bundt Cakes is actually the first true urban city model within the whole organization. So I'm really quite proud of that. But yeah, it was quite an adventure leading up to this point, and learned a lot about business and myself, of course, and excited to ramp up the Chicago market.
And so we like to be on the cutting edge of things here at WGN. But, you know, a couple of years ago, the craze was cupcakes.
Yes.
Is the craze going to be Bundt Cakes, do you think? Is that what's coming
up?
Well,
I certainly hope so. You know, anything sweet, I know Chicago loves. But Bundt Cakes are a little bit different, and I think they're definitely going to make Chicago a sweeter place.
Well, tell us why they're different. I mean, because you've brought in, what is this?
That is actually a buntlet that I brought in for you with our signature frosting and packaging. And we wrapped that up for you with a bow and a flower and our message card. And the actual shape of the Bundt cake is the first thing that would set it apart from a normal cupcake. It has the ridges, and of course there's the hole in the middle, and we like to joke that there's a hole in the middle so all the calories fall out.
Yeah. This is nice. Look at this, David. This is a nice, this would be a nice gift for somebody, wouldn't it?
It would be. It's very nicely presented, and you're like salivating.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We take a lot of pride in our presentation.
Now, who is the customer base that you're trying to target here?
You know, that's the great thing about Nothing Bundt Cakes is that really it targets everybody. It's funny, a lot of people that even say they don't like sweets, they taste the cake and it's all over. They go back for more. I think that this really markets to everyone. Even if you're gifting or you're just having a party yourself, we're kind of a one-stop shop, which is why I love this company. You can come in and you can get your cake, you can get balloons, a card, and a gift. So it's great for people on the go, which is why it was really alluring to me, because I used to work in corporate America, and as you know, time is very slim. So let's say you have something after work and you need to get a cake. Well, then you need to worry about your card and your little gift. So we're a one-stop shop, and we make it very convenient and easy for everybody.
You missed the opportunity there to say you get your cake and eat it too.
Oh, well, that was coming.
Yeah. So, you know, we hear a lot about the business atmosphere in Illinois and Chicago being sort of negative. People have had negative experiences, whether it be with, you know, local government or whatever. Are you finding that there's a lot of hassle when it comes to starting a business, or has this been a smooth process?
Well, you know, there's always been hiccups along the way, and I'm a firm believer that anything worth having is never easy, and you just keep your eye on the prize and realize that it's a blessed opportunity and it will eventually happen, and you just try to overcome those challenges, you know, whether it's permitting or, you know, trying to get into the spot that you want, and, you know, things take a little bit longer with commercial real estate, but it all ends up working out, and, you know, it's all worth it in the end.
Is it less stressful than being in a corporate job or more stressful?
I don't know if I can gauge it of being less or more. I think that it's just a different kind of stress. But knowing that in the end it's for yourself, it's a different level of anticipation and work and drive that you put into it. And knowing that, you know, like I said, it's for yourself, it's just all worth it.
Mm-hmm. We were joking about this when we knew you were coming in as a guest. And I said, well, this is sort of like following your spirit. You know how you have the spirit animal or whatever.
Right.
This is like following your spirit cake is what I said.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because it's, you know, if you love something and you have the drive, is it fair to say that you can accomplish these kinds of things, or is there more needed?
You know, it doesn't really feel like work. I can't remember the last day that I had off or had extra free time for myself, but every day when I get up, I may be a little tired or a little worn down, but I get into that bakery and the time just flies and the hours just fly, and I'm doing it for myself. I'm living my dream. And to be able to have a staff that is excited to be there and to empower them every day and to be in the face of the customers. And, you know, people come in for cake. I mean, they're generally excited to be there. They're celebrating something, even if it's for themselves. So it's every day is different and every day is really awesome.
Are you drooling over there, Dave?
No, I can tell you, though, I have, and not from your location, but from one of the other Nothing Bundt Cakes locations up in the northern suburbs, I know that I think whenever there's any sort of special occasion now, that's where we've gone to get cakes, because it's easy. Plus, you can get a smaller Bundt cake, so you don't have to worry about this big, whatever, birthday cake, whatever, and it's great. Yeah, it's really good, and
thank you.
It's exactly as Erica says.
Yeah, because after you get the cake, you'd have to go get a card, and you'd get the balloons, and if you can get it all in one spot, that's all the better.
Exactly.
Are you concerned at all that this might be a fad? I mean, because we saw all of these cupcake places come, and they were really, really popular, and now they're far and few between.
No, I mean, I think that with any new business, especially in the city, you know, everything's a risk, but I firmly believe in this product and I believe in the brand. You know, as you know, it's a franchise, and the support that corporate has given and the tools that they give you to set you up for success, and even the support with other franchisees, you know, throughout the country and in the surrounding Chicago areas. I mean, we really hold hands and you know, network together on how to make this work. And I believe in this so much. So I'm not really scared at risk at this point.
Well, we wish you all of the best of luck. And maybe you could give us an update after you're in it for a couple of months.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you.
Let us know how things are going.
You want me to bring more cake, don't you?
I have to say,
okay, you're on to it.
Right.
That's the whole deal here.
I think I can make that happen.
Because it has a nice little sunflower on it. And it's is this red velvet?
That is red velvet.
That's my favorite. Yeah, so somebody told you.
We knew that, Steve.
Yeah. So, again, good luck. I'm going to give everybody the address of this. 1953 North Clyburn, Erica Long, Nothing Bundt Cakes. And do you have a soft open date? Or
Well, actually, we had our soft open on December 27th. Okay. And this week is the grand opening festivity, so we're really charged about that. Wednesday starts with the ribbon cutting ceremonies with the Chicagoland and Lincoln Park Chamber of Commerce. And then Thursday, we have a wonderful Bundts and Bubbles event where we'll be sampling lots of cake and champagne, of course, and that's in the evening from 6 to 8. Friday, we're doing a beneficiary day where we give 20% of our proceeds to Immerman Angels. And then Saturday, we have a family fun event with the children's musician and Mary Macaroni, the face painter.
Sounds good. Well, again, good luck and have a good week. And
thank you so much.
A great grand opening. It's Erica Long, Nothing Bundt Cakes. Again, it's 1953 North Clyburn. This is the opening bell on WGN Chicago, and it's 5:48 traffic. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 550, and the market futures are higher in the United States. The Dow futures this hour are up about 63 points. The NASDAQ futures also higher this hour by about 10. Overseas, the Asian markets all in the red this morning. The Nikkei fell 69. The Hang Seng fell 565. Shanghai 169. Australia also saw losses, and so did Russia overnight. But again, it's not affecting the Dow futures this morning. Well, if you are out putting your resume together and shining your shoes, getting ready to go on a job search, there's some advice that you may not think it's something that you might even consider, because you should have confidence anyway. But believe it or not, a lot of people who are out there trying to pitch an idea or get a job are scared, and they're scared of looking stupid in front of people, so they don't ask specific questions sometimes, and sometimes they don't ask for advice on a project they're working on. As a matter of fact, a report published last year by researchers from Harvard and the Wharton School of Business found that people often don't ask advice because they just feel like they might look incompetent, even when they know they're obtaining some advice that would make them a success in their project. And despite the fact that asking for advice actually increases the perception of confidence, they still are quiet. Joseph Steinberg is the CEO of SecureMySocial.com and joins me via Skype on the opening bell this morning. Mr. Steinberg, give me an idea of what it is that you're talking about here. I mean, give me an example of how people behave.
People sometimes have a habit of feeling that if they take certain types of chances and things don't pan out the way they expected, that they're going to look stupid. They're going to look like, you know, how could this person have even thought of doing such a thing? You know, how stupid this person must be. And the reality is that certainly in the American culture and in the American business world, in general, you're far better off taking chances and trying to do things and taking on new and bigger challenges than letting that fear hold you back. I know of people who have had really phenomenal ideas and didn't patent them and didn't pursue them specifically because they thought that people would view the ideas as stupid. And in at least one of these cases, this was probably a multi-billion dollar idea that, you know, others patented and built tremendous businesses around them. And when those businesses blossomed, you said, hey, I heard about this many years ago from so-and-so. And that fear of looking stupid made the person actually act in a stupid fashion. So you don't want that to happen. If you have some great idea and you do a little bit of market research and it shows you that this idea might be a really wonderful thing to pursue, you don't want to be saying, well, I might look bad, so I don't want to do it. If it's a good idea and it's worth pursuing, you know, go for it.
You speak from personal experience. I mean, what kinds of things have you learned through your life that you've applied to this method?
So I've invented various information security products and founded businesses to bring them to market. And certainly the first time I did so, I was terrified that, you know, if the product didn't work or didn't deliver on what it was supposed to, that I would look really bad. I was afraid that people would think my idea for the product was not a, you know, smart idea, that, you know, hey, what kind of stupid solution is this? There's a lot of fear that comes into play when you have been working in a field and developed a reputation, and now all of a sudden you're saying, I've invented, you know, ABC. But at the same time, every product that comes to market and every person who invents a product probably has some level of that fear. The reality is when you introduce something new, there is a risk that it may not pan out. And there's a risk that it may not deliver what you think it's supposed to deliver. So everybody goes through that to some extent when they create something new. And anything great that ever has been invented, when it was invented, the people inventing it probably thought it was great. But deep down, there's probably some level of fear. You know, what if it's not accepted in the market? What if it's viewed in some bad light? So you don't want to let that hold you back. There are legitimate things to think about, right? Spending, how much it's going to cost to develop something, if there's a market for it, etc. But the concept of, I'm afraid that if I pursue this path, I will look stupid by introducing something new, is something that is probably not a good habit to be in the habit of doing.
You know, in journalism school, they taught us there's never a stupid question. Don't ever be afraid of asking a stupid question, although I'm sure there are some stupid questions. This sort of goes along that line. I mean, you have sort of a sense of when you are presenting yourself, as you suggest, there's a sense of confidence that people see. And also, people like to be asked for advice, don't they?
That's correct. You you began by mentioning that there's no such thing as a stupid question, essentially. I mentioned in the piece I'd written in Fortune that there's an old adage from a Jewish sage named Hillel who had said that people who are easily embarrassed cannot learn. And the primary understanding of that is if people are afraid to ask questions, they're never going to get to a point of fully comprehending a topic because everybody has questions about things. And if you just won't ask them because you're afraid you're going to look stupid, you'll never get beyond a certain level. And I think that that's true. And I think that's also true with advice. There's a fear that some people have that if they ask advice from somebody else, they're going to look like they don't know something or that they're stupid. The reality is that psychologically speaking, as you said, people like to be asked for advice. And the fact that you're asking someone qualified for advice actually shows that you're pretty smart because you realize that someone else may know something better than you and you want to leverage their wisdom rather than rely on your own. So intrinsically, it's probably the opposite. It probably demonstrates that you're actually pretty smart.
What advice would you give people who might be having trouble in this area? Is there any kind of training somebody can do before they go out in the world and try to impress people, as you suggest?
Well, if you're looking to found a business, there are many organizations out there that can help. If you're looking for advice related to growing a business, there are many great groups. The Entrepreneurs Organization has a program, for example, for people who've got businesses that have reached a quarter million dollars a year in revenue and want to try to grow it past the million mark. They call it the Accelerator Program. That's a great program to look into. In terms of general training, there are many great books. There are many great webinars out there. You want to learn a lot because starting a business is hard and most businesses fail. So you want to get as many things on your side as possible. The more training and the more knowledge you have, the better. Obviously, there are business schools for much more formal training. But if we're talking about people who aren't going to go for several years to school, there are less intensive programs that can be of great benefit.
Joseph Steinberg is CEO of SecureMySocial.com via Skype with me this morning on Twitter at Joseph Steinberg. And believe it or not, that's our program for this morning. We'll have the latest business news throughout the morning on Your Money. Stay with us and don't forget to tune in again tomorrow for the opening bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. It's 557.